You can be turning to Daniel chapter 1. We're in a series on how Christians respond to test and temptation. Yeah, that's good enough. What we've done so far, and by the way, I may get into a whole bunch of things, could be death, divorce, and all kinds of things, some challenges that we face in today's world. And I've forgotten how I got started on this, but I thought this is a good practical thing to let us understand that in the Bible it says that we're to follow the good examples. Paul says, follow me or imitate me as I imitate Christ. And then there are also warnings against following bad examples. So what we've covered so far in this series would be, what about a test in the area of our fear, our formidable threat? And of course, we saw that David went against Goliath, and he overcame that fear by total dependence on God's power. Then we saw that David was taking the ark to Jerusalem. Now, I purposely chose this and a couple others because you can take the extremes in a person's life, the great victories. You learn something. Or you can take his dalliance there with Bathsheba. That's a terrible defeat. But a lot of times we lose ground spiritually because we make little compromises. So when he's bringing the ark to Jerusalem, he deviated from God's command. And of course, he learned a lesson that you can't compromise. So he went back, studied his scriptures, and said, okay, let's get it right this time with the Levites carrying the ark. Then, of course, a well-known story how he was confronted with lust. He did not handle that in a God-approved manner. But, of course, what we need to learn from that is self-control. It's a sex-saturated society, so as you and I look around, we don't have to look very far before we're bombarded with sensual messages. We need to be able to overcome. And then, of course, with Saul trying to kill David and chasing him down there for a dozen, could be as much as 15 years, probably not quite that, probably about a dozen years, and he refused to take vengeance on Saul on two occasions when he had opportunity and his friends were telling him, go ahead and kill him, because if you don't, he's going to kill you first. Today, we're going to go ahead to Daniel chapter 1, how we're tested in the area of personal convictions. Now, this is very, very relevant for us today, because those who come to Daniel chapter 1, they're in captivity. And as they're taken away, Daniel was in the first of three captivities where the Babylonians came in and took away the princes and the rich people in the land. And they chose certain of these young men for their own purposes. So verse 4, there were young men in whom there was no blemish, good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, so that they might teach them the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank for 3 years of training for the purpose of serving the king after that. And then it mentions Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego along with Daniel, giving them their original Hebrew names. And then verse 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, when you and I are looking around, we're bombarded with messages in three areas. Some of these things you may remember from a dozen years ago. This is, I think, a message I preached from Jude 1. It talks about the angels who sinned. It talks about the pre-flood world upon whom God's judgment came. And it talks about Sodom and Gomorrah. But these are the three areas where you and I are hit with politically correct messages from the world. The first of all is rebellion, anarchy, independence. I mean, look at what's happening in our society to the level that we never thought it would happen here. I was reading yesterday, day before, about these people who shut down the freeway. Was it Was it Florida? They just tied up traffic both ways and it resulted in some deaths of people who were in an ambulance and they're thinking about bringing charges. 500 people just sat down in the middle of a dual-lane freeway just to make a point about the illegal immigrants in Texas. Well, you know, we're teaching people today after Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals that you can rebel against anything. There's no respect for authority. It's interesting that Saul Alinsky in his book dedicated the book to Satan, who was the original rebel. Now, by the way, he probably doesn't believe in Satan. He probably doesn't believe in any supernatural realm. But to him, that was a great hero that he stood against authority in order to do his own thing. I would be like the Most High. So anyway, you and I are now seeing, beginning on college campuses and things of this nature, this spirit of rebellion. Just no respect for any authority. Then these false voices from the humanistic views and emotions. Atheism, humanism, secularism, materialism. And obviously we can understand why they don't necessarily want creationism taught in the schools. It'd be a lot better if they did, because the opposing view gets more than equal time. And what's the danger in teaching people that God created the world? Because after all, they're supposed to learn the truth. We're backing off from that because we say science has proved something different. No, science has not. I mean, when you look at the laws of science, there are two inviolable laws of science. One is the second law of thermodynamics. There are four laws of those. And then the other law is a law of biogenesis. Now, what that means is science says that life cannot come from non-life. Life has to come from life. But there's one exception, and that's how it all began, because they don't like the explanation of God. Anyway, our young people are fighting battles in this area, and some of the kids I had in high school wrote back and said, what you told us was right. They told us in the biology class when we were talking about origins, when you write that paper, if you so much as mention anything about the Bible, the paper gets an automatic F. What kind of education is that? But we're bombarded with materialism. And this, I think, is the thing that's rubbed off on the church. And then this area of sensuality and perversion. We don't have to say a lot about that. It's invading our homes even when you don't want it. You folks who have young teenagers with a phone like this, it's easy to access pornography. And what that does to the brain is really an interesting study in and of itself. Don't have time to go into that. But this is a mark of a pagan culture. Now, don't expect the world to be friendly to what you and I believe. They're not going to be. They're going to send these messages to us and simply say, you conform or we're going to neutralize you. So as we look at it, here we come with Daniel. Now, some of these things are not new, but I think I preached on a series on Daniel. Was it 10 years ago? Some of you weren't here, so let me just remind you. When you look at how a godless society or a secular society tries to brainwash Christians, there are three steps. This is called counterconversion. Now, the reason they use counterconversion is we believers say we were converted to Christ, to a Christian view based on the Bible. Society says we can't allow that. So we have to reverse that. So it's a counterconversion. It's still the steps in brainwashing that they use today. So the first step is isolation. I'm not going to read all those things to you. But John McCain mentions this about his war prisoner experience and all that. They don't want people to support one another. So they break them up and put them in isolation. They support them from the old, separate from the old support group. They put them in a new support group, and then they create a dependence on a new authority. We could go a long time on some of those, but it just makes sense. Divide and conquer. They know what they're doing. They know exactly how it works. Now, when you look at Daniel, what did they do? They said, let's go ahead and separate from all the other Jews. Let's put them in a sequestered, sequestered and cloistered area, where they are subjected only to the influences of the Babylonian culture, especially education. We give them a 3-year training course, a college scholarship at no cost to them. So you can see here, the first thing they did is they offered them food and drink. Now, again, this is the surest way to get people to support you is when you give them freebies. You know, that's nothing new. It makes you dependent on them. So here he is in the palace, and if he doesn't do it the king's way, well, the king can first of all have him killed if he wants to, but he can simply say starve then, but they turn it down. I think I mentioned one time that in certain areas, Charlotte and I lived in an area where there was a heavy Jewish constituency, and in some of the Safeway stores, they had these big 50-pound bags of salt with the word in Hebrew, kosher, because they may not be close to a Jewish butcher who would bleed the animal. They electrocute animals now, traps of blood, and the disease germs are in the blood. So they would dehematize the meat. They would put salt in water and drop that big roast in there. And then after it drew the blood out of it, you looked at that and said, I don't want to eat it. It looks like a gray brain. But anyway, the Jewish folks, life of the flesh is in the blood, so they didn't want to eat any kind of blood at all. So they offer meat. Nope. Daniel wasn't going to take any chances. That wasn't the kosher menu that they were used to. I saw this someplace. I modified the saying. If there was a barnyard election, the animals would always vote for the first person that feeds them. Sound familiar? Even though it's the same person who plans to slaughter them someday. You know, fatten them for the kill. There's an ulterior motive in what society is trying to do to us because they want to take advantage of us and especially neutralize us and convert us completely to their way of thinking. So they isolated them and tried to make them dependent upon the new system. The second step is indoctrination. Now, again, they're teaching them for 3 years in all the literature of the Chaldeans. Egypt was probably the most religious culture in the ancient world. But the Chaldeans were also very, very superstitious, had a whole pantheon of gods, and most of their literature revolved around religious themes. So they're going to be teaching them a whole new view about the gods who ruled. They probably taught them heptoscopy, you know, how to kill a chicken, take the liver, cut it open, and read the fortunes and whether or not you could, the kings would say, is it safe to venture out to fight another army? Well, they didn't do a single thing unless they had the magicians and others give them the okay first. So the purpose of indoctrination is to make sure you remove all the old ideas and the loyalties of people and you replace them with new ideas and loyalties. Does that sound familiar? Culture has a lock on education, except for homeschoolers. Well, Christian schools too. I'm glad for the homeschool movement. Now, if you send your kids to public school, that's a decision you have to make. You probably won't monitor it pretty well. It depends on the age and all that stuff. But rest assured that what they will get in a secular classroom, and probably far worse in college, is nothing but the party line of secular humanism. So we turn our kids over to other people to indoctrinate them, and it doesn't seem to have any effect for a while. But then at some point, although the kids will conform, it blows up in the parents' face. I know I've had them in my office, both as a principal and as a pastor, wondering why everything exploded. The kid was no problem at all for years and years and years, and now they're turning against every single thing the parents tried to teach them. Sometimes it smolders under the surface. Sometimes there's enough control of the parents that doesn't show until they see the light in the tunnel, and then they're gone. That's why books out there are written called Already Gone, because we've already lost our kids. With the church, we've lost our kids sometimes in our home, and those same kids often have been taught you don't have to respect authority. So forget you, mom and dad. Many times that's crept into Christian homes. So we parents can't assume Our kids are picking up values by osmosis. We need to interact with them. None of this parents, well, mothers have more, but sometimes they estimate fathers only have 4 minutes of meaningful interaction with their kids during the course of a regular day. Some estimates are less than that. You know, we need to know where our kids are. We need to do things with them. But indoctrination. Now, that goes to the point where you see there in verse 6 and also verse 7 that here are Hananiah, well, actually Mishael, Meshach, and Azariah. Now, if I would say, who are those three? And I've done this before. Everybody draws a blank. Who in the world are these three? And then I say, well, now, they had new names, Shadrach, Meshach. Oh, yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about now. Because names are important. So here are the four representatives, and they look at their names and say, they remind them of God. We can't have that. Now, Charlotte and I, one of the first things we did when Matthew, Mark, and Luke, a company put out these plaques. It used to be only parchments you could get. And then they decided to decoupage the plaques. And we just left them on the basement wall. We thought the kids would take them when they left home. But I think Bob and Carla got a whole new series for their wall of their own kids. And I don't know. I don't remember seeing them in the other homes. But we chose names because they were important. We chose names that would at least remind them something and give them something to strive to for. By the way, after I took this picture, Carla, I don't know why you got switched with Keith. I think Keith wanted to move up to a more important spot. So one day he was there, he moved it. But anyway, all of our names have meanings. And we were hoping that they would look at a spiritual meaning and it would make a difference in whether they lived up to it. Some name, you know, if you've got the name Adolf, that's hard to work with that one. Well, one of them, they had Dionysius. And actually, it was the word Dennis. And it came from Dionysius from Acts chapter 17. It means God of wine. Now, they didn't want to put that on a plaque, so they chose some kind of spiritual meaning. After all these years, I don't remember what it was. Overly enthusiastic, maybe. I'm not sure what, but... and actually, that wasn't the meaning. That the Dionysus was a god of wine, but the meaning of Dionysus was a different meaning anyway. Anyway, some names are harder to work with. Now, when you come to this one, if you've never seen this before, every day that Daniel got up and he was confronted with something, probably in the back of his mind, it had been ingrained, you're accountable to God. God will judge. Every day his name reminded him of an awesome responsibility he had to God. Well, they didn't want that. So they changed his name to Belteshazzar, which means Bel will protect. Number one deity, Marduk was another name, in their Babylonian worship system. And he was saying that now it's not God that you need to be accountable to, but Bel is going to be the one who takes over in your life to protect you. So that's in the area of who now is the authority in his life. They were trying to get him to understand your God doesn't matter anymore. Our God is the only one that's important. Now keep in mind we may not be talking about something religious that is worshipped. John Stuart Mill, never finished reading the book, but I was surprised. He had a small little book out called Social Tyranny. Now, he wrote this book 100 and some years ago. Most people remember him from utilitarianism, where he simply said, whatever is practical and useful, that's a value system that you choose. But in his book, he was decades and maybe a century ahead of his time because the book centers around the pressure that society puts on people to conform. With social media and all of these things, man, look at people out there who've lost their job because they put something maybe political, something that the company didn't agree with, something that was protected by our freedom of speech, and man, they lose their jobs. Well, you look at that and say, what's this society coming to? But social pressure now is starting to come against Christians to say, keep your mouth shut and don't interfere with our belief system. And many of us have fallen silent. I'm not saying be obnoxious, but I am saying look for opportunities, even if it's going to cost you, to speak something for the Lord. So Daniel has his name changed. I put these two together because they changed their name from God, the Lord is gracious, to under the command of Aku. And Mishael had his name changed to Meshach, who is like Aku. Now, Aku in their culture is the same as Venus and Ashtoreth and Aphrodite in other cultures. In other words, this was a god of sexuality and pleasure. So instead of saying God's gracious or who is like the Lord, their very name, they were confronted with this part of the language they were using. Their new name would simply tell now, live for fun, live for pleasure, live for passions. That's the message they were trying to give these young people. Erase any reminder of God from their life. It's not just taking 10 commandments off the school wall. It's just that a teacher can't even leave a Bible lying on their desk to read during lunch break because it may cost them their job. You know, what message are young people going to pick up from that? When any reference to God and Christianity is outlawed out of the school, they pick up the message really easy. And that is secularism rules, and it is the accepted one because it goes unchallenged. Azariah, meaning the Lord helps. Now, Abednego becomes a servant of Nego, which is also Nebo. And he was the number two deity. Anyway, we don't have to go into detail with that. But he was in charge of science and technology and culture and generally materialism. Well, what kind of message is that? Well, people worship these things nowadays. If science says it, that makes it right, doesn't it? Science has proven that the Bible's outdated. Science has proven that creationism can't be right. And then you look at the science and it hasn't done a single thing. It's just making some religious pronouncement about its own belief. But it sounds so authoritative. So our young people buy into this. So now we're saying to our young people, don't worry about what your parents believe. Don't worry about your Christian heritage. Don't worry about the Bible or the message of the Bible, because we want you to worship something different. We want you to worship a new authority who claims allegiance in your life. We want you to worship and live for sexuality and pleasure. We want you to give a lot of credence to what science pronounces, because they are the ones who are the authority. Now, these people knew what they were doing. Because when they set up this whole thing, they probably had a little bit of a meeting and say, what's the strategy we will use to make sure that these young people conform to a new way of life, what we believe and what we want them to believe? The third one is involvement. That is total capitulation, total conformity. You want to get them involved. 1 Peter chapter 4. Yeah, forgotten which verse it is, probably 3 or 4. It says, they think it's strange that you don't run with them to the same excess of riot. Well, you and I as believers, we are a walking conscience against the misbehavior of other people. It's not enough for you to beg off from an office party. If they sense that you don't want to go because there's drink and other things involved, oh man, be prepared for things to be unleashed. I even had that happen one time when I was working at Ace Hardware. They were having a Saturday night party. It wasn't a bad party, but we were having a church dinner. Maybe it was a Valentine's banquet over at the Christian school. So I said, I won't be able to make the party tonight because I've got another prior church commitment. Wouldn't you know it, those rascals scheduled me to close that night. It was spite. In fact, I know it was spite. I wasn't going to go to their party, so they made sure I closed up. So by the time I closed up and balanced out and made the bank deposit and all that stuff, I got over at the church at the tail end of everything else that was happening. Look, be prepared for recriminations if you make your Christian view too obvious. If you want to stand for something, you can do that. But you can't always choose what other people will do in reaction. The goal is achieved when you and I are totally converted to their way of thinking. Now, some Christians have caved. Some have capitulated totally. Some churches out there have even made pronouncements endorsing things that God still views as an abomination. Now, if you and I are blending our voices with society's voices, those are the wrong mixed signals to send to people. We ought to be people of deep compassion. We know that people are hurting. But we need to draw the line when they say to us, not only should you tolerate what we are doing, we want your full approval and your full endorsement. They're not going to be happy unless they get that. I'm talking about the militants. I'm not talking about just people who've been trapped in a way of life that just is so unfortunate spiritually for them, where they're locked in emotionally to a commitment that they shouldn't have. Yeah, we need to deal with them with a tremendous amount of compassion. But there are some leaders out there who know full well exactly what they're doing because it's in their game plan. So what they do is through these means here, education, the media. We'll look at news now, fake news. I mean, that's more serious than you know because it's depriving us of that which is true. That is a basis for... it could be elections. It could be any number of things in our culture. Look at the messages in music. They know what they're doing. They know the discriminating powers of the brain are lowered when there's an anapestic beat in music. Because what it does, it creates stress and adrenaline, which gobbles up the sugar, and then the brain has its ability to think lowered, and you have young people then, and the musicians will tell you, we do that to reach a certain level of hypnotizability, and then we zap them with a message. They know what they're doing. Social pressure, legislative action. And we knew that this is what they're going to do because they redefine some terms. They make it the law of the land. Now they've got a club they can use in the courts. And that's a powerful thing. Well, I may have another message on Daniel 6. How did Daniel respond to it? Our time's fast getting away. Good old Ben Franklin, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Which is more important, prevention or a cure? There's a reason insurance companies will pay for preventative tests. Because they know a $125 test one time a year is way cheaper than $80,000 worth of surgeries. Now, this, by the way, you can tell right away, it's not accurate. Because if Ben Franklin's right, for one over here, there should be 16 land up there. Who knows? You can't quantify that. But I know one thing. I'd much rather take some probiotics now than have some debilitating illness later. Prevention is better than cure, especially when there is no cure. And in some spiritual decisions, some young people have found to the regret that they have reaped a harvest in a terminal illness, an STD that there's no cure for. Because again, ideas, decisions have consequences. We need to protect our kids, first of all. And for kids who are grown, maybe we can help influence other kids in the church or our grandkids or whatever. Although I've given up on two of them. I tell Carla, I'm going to send her two sons back to her because they come in at 1:30 at night, and then I tend to sit there a minute and eat some stuff with them, especially when I make Brunswick stew and biscuits, and they're chowing down on it. I figure I know better than to eat after midnight, but I dig out a plate just to be sociable. Anyway, prevention is better than cure. Now, hopefully all of you have one of these copies. If you came in late, don't have one, we can send one of the guys back with that. I've shown this a couple times, and you weren't able to read it. I knew that. It comes out in a number of different forms that I've put together. But I want to emphasize something that's extremely important. When you and I get over here to the decision that we make, we just figure that, okay, there's an opportunity, I'm zapped with it, so I start from there and I make a good decision or a bad decision. I make a godly decision or a sinful decision. That really is not where the battle was really won. The battle was won before the test. Amen. Now, as a teacher, I know I never once said to the students, by the way, we're going to have a test tomorrow. Now, after the test is over, you see what's on, then you could go study, you know, dig out your notes and study. No. I said, be sure to study for this thing because it's going to be a doozy. Now, God doesn't give tests like that. Oh, yeah, we know some Bible trivia questions and things of that nature. But God says to us, commit yourself to me and my word. And as you do, you'll learn more about me and you'll learn more about my standards. So if you and I, and by the way, I put these together, and don't worry about those fancy words, saturation. What do I absorb on a daily basis? What have I taken into my thinking over the years that I've been a believer? Because what I've been focusing upon will determine whether I really understand who God is and what his standards are. And if I have respect for those and I memorize some scripture verses or I just sit down and just read a chapter of the Bible here and there, read it for what you get out of it. Don't read it to mark off a little list. It doesn't do any good to read the Bible in a year if you go through it with an Evelyn Woods speed that you don't pick up any content. You can't talk to Rod many times more than a couple of minutes before he said, well, you know, I was reading, you know, in 1 Samuel, I think was the last one, and he said something I noticed, and he's already picking up some things that he learned from what he was reading that morning. If you and I neglect the scriptures, guess what? We come to a challenge. We don't always know what God has to say about it. It's more than likely we're going to probably fail. So, what standards have I adopted? Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's meat. This is an advanced decision. Because as a Jewish young person, he had understood the dietary laws. He'd understood as a covenant people, God had certain expectations. So he simply said, hey, before anything happens, this is where I stand, and I'm not going to move. So they give him a dish of all kinds of delicacies. And he says, no thanks, I'll take my pinto beans if you don't mind. That's Hebrew for lentils, are the things he asked for. But at the end of a couple weeks, their health was a lot better than the other people who were chowing down on all the delicacies. Well, fact of the matter is, he decided in advance that his loyalty to God was done to take precedence on everything else. New Testament, walking in the Spirit is a strategy. Now, on the other hand, if you and I come to a test in which we've been sloppy with our thinking, when we have allowed our minds to be filled with entertainment, images on the internet, you know, let's face it, what does that prepare us for? It prepares us to go in that direction of indulgence. Especially if we do that to the neglect of scriptures. So down here, what are we saturating our minds with? And let's face it, I've worked with people whose minds were in the gutter. I knew where their minds were, and it was no surprise to me then when they start talking about their exploits with other women on Saturday night and scoring here, scoring there. You know, you look at that and say, we Christians don't often think in those terms, but it's out there. It's prominent all over. That's why I think marriage will only succeed, not if you're committed to one another, but if both of you are committed to God. Amen. Because marriage is His. Speaking as a former spouse, I was probably not Charlotte's first choice at times. She was gracious enough to never tell me. But let's face it, we all have our days, don't we? The point is, if I'm committed to God and I'm thankful to Him for my partner, you think I'm going to cut her some slack? Is she going to cut me some slack on those off days? Because commitment to God takes precedence over whether or not he, she will be meeting my needs. And that's what young people are going to marriage with. What about standards they have? Personal satisfaction. Go for the gold. Live for the gusto. Whatever it is, that's a message in society. Strategy. Well, we don't have to go into that. We'll come into that a little bit later. But when people start to rationalize what they do and why they do it, and this is what society believes, and, you know, if we live in this world down here of sensual thinking, and then an opportunity presents itself, guess what? It's likely that we're going to gravitate to sinful actions. And let me emphasize again something I've said a couple times. People do not sin in a vacuum. They don't sin just because, hey, an opportunity. No. The opportunity only if affects them because their mind is already there. And they're vulnerable. You and I are vulnerable. We look back on all of our failings, and we know that we failed because we were thinking something in our minds that were things that were setting us up to make a choice that turned out to be a wrong choice. Now, we've only got a few minutes. Don't try to match this up with what I just showed you. I'm pulling this out of Daniel. We start with him. Spiritual sanctification. He's committed to God's standard of holiness. Right from the get-go. God is the authority in his life and what God's standards. Spiritual saturation you find throughout the scriptures. There in Daniel, he's reading the book of Jeremiah. He's praying all the way through. Again, he's totally dependent on the Lord and his relationship with him. And then he is submissive, completely dependent upon God, and his allegiance to God is going to be there no matter whether he has the support of his friends or not. It's a decision he made. So if we are already prepared spiritually, we've already decided in our minds that this is our priority, then you and I will quite often, not guaranteed to be successful, but it's the first step in spiritual success. Notice the four ways he responded. When you are put on the spot with a test, your allegiance to your job, any number of things, what do you do? He requested that he would not defile himself with the king's meat. Melzar said, you're going to get me in big trouble because this is my job to get you guys groomed for this. So when his appeal was turned down, then he gave a creative alternative. He said, well, let's try this. Put us on veggies for the next couple weeks and then check to see if the diet's adequate for us. And you know the rest of the story. Yes, it was. Abstinence. And if the first two don't work, then you have to simply, in a gracious way, put your foot down and say, I'm sorry, I can't conform. It may cost you your job. It may not. There will be consequences, usually, if you don't pad the books, if you don't adjust the contracts, if you don't do some underhanded things here and there to make more money from the company. Well, these are the three alternatives we have. Sometimes we jump right to this and say, I'm not going to do it. Why don't we give them an alternative, a creative alternative that says, hey, how about transfer me over to another part of the company where I don't have to work with this area? If you're a good employee, they may do it. They may not. Well, the other one that Daniel didn't run into here in chapter 6, that is avoidance. You know, just stay low profile so that they don't see that you're not conforming what they do. Daniel did that in chapter 6 when he prayed up there in his upper chambers. By the way, there's another reason for that. But the point is, when you're confronted with something, let's say it's some authority, could be the government. When anyone tells you to follow their authority rather than God's authority, that's where civil disobedience comes in. That is where refusal comes in. You don't do it defiantly. You simply say, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And you willingly take the consequences. Be nice to take some insights from you folks. Maybe you've run into this thing. Maybe you're in an area today where you didn't think you would be. All these things Daniel had. By the way, let me just put this up here and then not even go to it. Because it would take me a week in a college class of apologetics to go through this. What I'm simply saying is we didn't get here just because something happened, some explosion in the 20th century. It's been building and building and building all the way back to the Greek times so that this is what modern people are thinking. And you and I have to understand that. We're 1 minute over, so let me just simply say I would encourage you to check out the book, The Marketing of Evil. These others are terrific books here, but this Marketing of Evil is absolutely outstanding. How people are selling us corruption disguised as freedom. When you go into an antique store, I think I showed this one time, probably about before 2010. It's all I can do to walk through an antique shop. I'm surprised at the prices that are on there. But one of the things that's interesting, Tony Campala had a book called Who Switched the Price Tags? We had to use adhesive, permanent adhesive stickers on books to make sure people didn't switch them before they brought it to the counter. It's sad that even in a Christian marketplace you had to do that. But anyway, in a place like this, people switch price tags, that's true. But what if somebody turns out the light and you're standing there? There's a power outage. You don't have a clue what's in there, and you certainly don't know the prices. America, the government, schools, and churches, all three have steadily fallen away from Judeo-Christian values. They're the things that gave life and strength to us. But notice, this is equivalent to turning out the country's lights. And when you turn out the lights, everything looks dark. That's multiculturalism. And may I say, that's political correctness. In the darkness of the world, they say things are important that we Christians cannot afford to buy into because they always leave God out of the equation. I love this verse in 2 Timothy 2. Let me just quote it for you. Nevertheless, well, the Old King James says, foundation of God stands sure. New King James says, sure foundation stands solid. Having this seal, the Lord knows them that are his. By the way, you're protected by his hand, even in the tough times. The Lord knows those who are his. Flip side of the coin. And let everyone who names the name of the Lord depart from iniquity. What a privilege to be a Christian in today's age, and what a challenge. I shudder to think what my grandchildren are going to face. I mean, I'm reminded here of the look at Corian. You know, little Max, and there are other kids that are in our church. Isn't it a great concern whether or not we can train our young people well enough to withstand some of the stuff that's out there? Only God's grace will let us do that. Shall we stand in closing prayer? And our Father, we thank you for your great grace unto us. We look at Daniel, and what a man of resolve. In fact, a young man, probably not much more than a teenager, but a man who understood who you are and what you expect. And despite all the pressures against him and his friends, they stood firm and they stood true to your word. Today, might we rely upon your wisdom and your grace to make the right decision, to have the right thinking, and to follow the way of righteousness, which will be a beacon in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. And because of that, might we see other people come to know Christ, who will give them eternal life and the assurance of a home in heaven. Thank you for the privilege in Christ's name. Amen.